and the world. I'm John Batchelor with the author, Patrick O'Donnell. His new book, The Indispensables, the diverse soldier mariners who shaped the country, formed the Navy, and rode Washington across the Delaware. Arriving in July of 1775, straight from the Congress, is George Washington to take command. What was the Marblehead opinion of Washington when he first arrived? Were they affectionate towards him as they became?
George Washington needed a headquarters, and that headquarters was at the Vassal House, and it was the Marbleheaders that were guarding the Vassal House. That's where they encamped. And Washington develops a very unique and important relationship with the Marbleheaders. He trusts them, and that bond of trust is something that will extend through the entire Revolution. And they guard Washington, and it's here at the Vassal House that, you know, Washington is also introduced to nautical things. It's John Glover who's in charge of the regiment at this point. And powder becomes, it remains the crucial supply. They need it badly. Washington takes an inventory of the army. And the men that are camped around the Vassal House and around Boston are, you know, thousands strong, but they have in their cartridge boxes 7 or 8 cartridges. There's hardly any powder at all. If the British charge out, they may not even be able to fend them off. And Washington is coming up with, you know, he realizes that he is in dire straits. And they start to figure, you know, they come up with ideas on how to get more powder. One of them is to potentially raid Halifax, which has in Canada, you know, large stores of powder, but they need to get there and they need a ship. And that's where Washington relies on John Glover.
This is we're about to meet Washington's Navy. Quite extraordinary, because Congress was not part of this decision making. Washington creates his own Navy, and it was purposeful. It was for powder, but it's led by and participated in by the Marblehead sailors. So these are perfect Marines who lay down their military land fighting and take up the sea fighting. Chief among them is John Manly. Who is he?
John Manly is got sort of a mysterious past. He may have been born in England. He might have been born in Boston. But he's a Marbleheader. And John Manly is one of the captains that Glover and Washington find. And they have a series of what they're known as cruisers. These are very fast ships. They're lightly armed, in most cases about four-pound cannon, 4 pound being the weight of the ball. And their goal is to intercept British transports, which are laden with powder. And that's the main goal, powder ordnance, anything else they can get their hands on, because the Continental Army is in such desperate need of powder and other supplies. And they see all these transports coming in, and they think, well, there's a possibility that a fast ship could pick off one of these ships and seize the powder. And that's exactly what happens with John Manly. He captures one of the richest prizes of the entire war, a ship that's laden with ordnance and also a massive mortar that they renamed the Congress, which they use at the siege of, on Dorchester. They use on Dorchester Heights when they bombard the British in Boston. And, the ship comes at exactly the right time. They capture this ship, and they capture many other ships that provide the army with crucial powder at exactly the right time, the right place.
Washington's Navy eventually will have, I have the names of the ships, 5 ships, the Lee, the Warren, the Hancock, the Franklin, and the Lynch. However, Washington's Navy is not all smooth going, because what we have here are men who have different attitudes about their risk and how they should present themselves to Washington, who is appointing leadership, but without really the writ of Congress. You can say, again, this is a civil war where there's spontaneity and regret and resentment. Patrick tells these stories repeatedly. They're quite turning, because there's not a sharp difference between being a patriot and being self-interested, back and forth. I mention this because these are pirates from the British point of view, and eventually will fight sea battles with the British. Some of them will be captured, then escape, and then come back. It's one of the revelations of Patrick's book, Washington's Navy. There's another revelation, however. We've got very little time here in Massachusetts before we're on to New York and New Jersey and the famous incident at the Delaware. The forming of the Life Guard, led by Caleb Gates. Who are they, Patrick?
Washington, he needs somebody to guard his headquarters full time, because he realizes that if the British conduct a raid and they capture Washington, the indispensable man, if you will, of the Revolutionary War, it could end the revolution. So Washington comes up with a volunteer group of handpicked men known as the Commander-in-Chief's Guard, or the Life Guard more commonly. And it's led by a Marbleheader, Caleb Gibbs, who Washington meets at the Vassal House first, and he develops a strong trust with Gibbs. And he has to develop this entire group from scratch. It's an early precursor, if you will, to the Secret Service. They not only guard the Commander-in-Chief, but they guard his papers. They also have the authority to act or issue orders on behalf of the Commander-in-Chief. And as the war goes on, they even conduct special missions and are in battle as well. But Gibbs, who was basically a second in command, if you will, of the Marblehead Regiment, is now in charge of the Life Guard. And the Guard is just a fascinating story, John. I mean, it's they organized a group of volunteers, handpicked men from various units. Washington wants drilled men, so to speak, men that had been in combat. But unfortunately, that also means some former British soldiers that are now part of the Continental Army, and they are also part of the Guard. And there's some intrigue there as they go towards New York.
Before we leave Massachusetts, is Beverly a pirate den? What is Beverly to the Marbleheaders?
Beverly is right located right next to Marblehead, but it has a really unique port. It's a protected port that can be easily defended. But the port itself is also has lots of, it's very, very difficult to get into Beverly Port unless you know it. And this works in the Patriots' behalf, because you need to have a skilled pilot to navigate the waters, because there's sandbars, everything else. The Royal Navy, if they tried to attack or enter Beverly without a skilled pilot, would probably beach their craft. And that's what they were relying upon when they built basically the Washington's Navy. It spawned at Glover's Wharf, which is in Beverly, where there's warehouses, etc. And many of the ships sail from Beverly, which is very heavily defended. And it's where they sail out of, and they sail back into with their prizes and whatever they seized.
A sea battle, February of 76. Patrick's book is filled with these wonderful moments. The Manley, now Commodore of the Washington's Navy, takes on the British warship Sea Nymph, I believe, and one other. And they battle with his, I guess he has a flotilla of ships that sail. Who wins that battle? Does the Royal Navy write up that battle in some heroic fashion?
It's quite interesting. If you're familiar with the term Q-ship, this is what the Sea Nymph was. It was, in a sense, it was a Revolutionary War Q-ship. It was the British attempt to...
We have 30 seconds. Patrick, we have 30 seconds.
Go ahead. Make it look like one of Washington's cruisers. And they literally tried to stalk Manley with this vessel, and they had some interesting, you know, battles at sea, versus Manley against the Sea Nymph, etc.
Before there was the Continental Navy, we're going to New York. Patrick O'Donnell, The Indispensables, about the Marbleheaders. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.